castle stood on an island in the Seine River, accessible only by a thin stone bridge with an iron gate on either side. Waves lapped against three of the sides, sides that were as stony and forbidding as the walls that stretched to the sky. It was a Thursday in September when the Baron, who lived in the castle, clicked the second gate, alone on the island, but for three servants who, at their employer's insistence slash command, kept to themselves and lived in a wholly different wing of the household, away from his treasures. No one, save him and him alone, knew all that he kept in the castle.
"Who goes there?" barked the Baron.
The letter carrier waved. "Still him, like it had been for almost every day for the past 10 years.
The Baron harumphed. "Well, you can never be too careful."
The letter carrier mumbled that you absolutely can, and this is the definition of it. He passed the mail through the iron at one side of the bridge, resting the letters on a stone ledge inside. He heard the key squeak on the Baron's side and stepped back. He called out that the Baron had to sign for this one. He was careful. He couldn't even give the appearance of disturbing this one's sanctum. The last guy had been the Baron's carrier for 20 years. One day, he reached too close to the Baron. One letter later, and he was fired without a pension. When the Baron's gold-tipped cane had tapped across the stone bridge, dragging the velvet of his robe, he held up a letter. "Sign for it." "Who's this from?" he barked to the carrier. The man said that he just delivered the mail, but it should be on the envelope. The Baron squinted as he held it away from him. It said, "Oh, that can't be right." It said it was from prison. The carrier said, "Oh, that's interesting. Did the Baron know anyone in prison?" The Baron didn't know anyone at all. He was a recluse. He had never married, nor had children. His business had concluded decades ago with him becoming a multimillionaire, and he didn't have friends. This letter was wholly unexpected. Well, it kind of doesn't matter if someone should be writing you a letter because someone did. A registered letter, so you have to sign for it. The carrier laid down the paper on the ledge and stepped back. The Baron signed and eyed the letter before tearing it open right there. His eyes scanned the letterhead. Prison de la Santé in Paris. Was this a joke? The carrier rolled his eyes. He had no idea. He just delivered the mail. Wait. Was that signed by Arsène Lupin? The master thief? But he's in prison. The Baron nodded. Yeah, the prison de la Santé. Apparently, he's coming here on September 27th. He says he's gonna rob me. I'm Jason Weiser. From Next Pod, this is Fictional. "It's not him," the man's mustache bristled. "But what if it is?" the Baron demanded. This was his first time out of his house in 2 years, and it was not going well. People were loud and rude, and carriages were big and scary, and he just wanted to go home, but he needed help. "It's not," the man, not looking up from his bobber in the water, said without looking to the Baron. The Baron stood wringing his hands, but he knew everything. He knew the layout of my house, which paintings were in which rooms, which drawers held which jewels, which paintings were fakes. He knew it all. He said if I didn't package some of them up and bring them to the train station in 8 days, he would take all of them for his trouble, the Baron whined. The little man, just trying to fish, told the Baron that it sounded like he needed to watch who he invited to dinner. Someone was selling information to someone else who was then pretending to be Arsène Lupin. They were messing with the Baron. Did the Baron know how he knew that?
"Because you got him? You arrested Master Thief Arsène Lupin?" the Baron asked. "Because I got him. He's in jail because of me," Detective Ganimard stated. "It took months. I had to beat him to America, but I got him.
I also got a promotion and a vacation, which is what I'm on right now. Please, will you at least read the letter? The Baron wasn't used to his three servants ever telling him no, so he pressed the paper into Ganimah's hands. Ganimah hooked the pole on his chair, rolled his eyes, and read it. There are similarities to his handwriting, the detective allowed, inspecting it. But it's not him. Not even Lupin would announce the night he's going to rob somebody. Similarities, the Baron smiled and pointed to the man. Ganimah said there were similarities. He just wanted peace of mind for this. Would Ganimah come to the house on the 27th? He would pay the man. How much did Ganimah make in a year? Ganimah pointed to the river. He was on vacation. Lupin was in prison. This would be a waste of his vacation and the Baron's money. The answer was no. Now would the Baron please leave? He was scaring away the fish. Feet pounded on the path, and the bell rang out front. There was a telegram. A telegram for the Baron, and the writer had said it was urgent. The Baron read the telegram, and it said simply, "No goods at the train station. Prepare everything for tomorrow night. Arsene." The Baron waved his hands. Ah! He opened the gate, slammed it behind him, and ran for town. "Come on, you have to help me," the Baron begged Ganimah. Still at the dock, in his straw hat with his fishing pole, "Arsene Lupin is still locked up in prison," the famed detective said. "And he would be, like, forever." He was packing up his fishing pole. You know how I know this? One, because, once again, I'm the guy who put him there. And two, if he managed to do what no one before him had done and escape La Santé, there would be a man running frantically down that hill from the telegraph office. For me. To catch him again because I caught him the first time. Do you see a man running frantically down that hill? The Baron looked toward the hill. No? Then he didn't escape and your house is fine. Leave me alone. Also, you should not have published that letter in the paper. The Baron said he needed help and no one would help him. He didn't know what else to do. The Baron looked to the ground. All right. How much? Ganimah said the Baron couldn't afford it. Plus, it was unethical. Plus, he was on vacation. The Baron said that the great detective would be surprised what he could afford. What if it wasn't to investigate? What if it was just to simply sleep in a castle? Many people in his position in life would pay to stay in a castle, but he could get paid to sleep in one. Would, say, 3,000 work for one night's work? Ganimah sighed. That was a lot of money. Okay, he would do it. Two conditions. No one knew about his involvement, and no doubt the Baron took this to the local authorities. The Baron nodded, he did. And they laughed. Yes, because Arsene Lupin is in prison. The first part of the deal is that you don't tell anyone I'm doing this. I don't do freelance work unless people are willing to pay me absurd amounts of money on my vacation. And my presence there lends credence to the theory that it's Arsene Lupin when it's not. Second part is that if we're going to do this, we're going to do it right. I'll bring my own people that I trust. Do you trust your servants? The Baron said he trusted them with his life. Okay, first, wrong answer. Give them the night off. We have to control all the variables. If it is Lupin, which it isn't, you have to assume he could be anybody. I rode with him by boat back from America. And I'm not entirely certain I could pick him out of a lineup. The man barely knows his own face, Ganimah said, sighed, and started packing up his pole. If he was going to telegram his guys, he had to get to the office before it closed. So much for his vacation. Let's run through things one more time, Ganimah said. The Baron smiled. The old detective did have the reputation for being frustratingly, exhaustively thorough. They were in the guardhouse, from which they had a view of the bridge over the Seine, and the entirety of the property leading up to the house. Inside the house were Ganimard's guys, armed and waiting in the room with the riches Lupin had threatened to steal. There were three ways into the castle. The bridge with two iron gates and them watching, the Seine, which they were also watching, and the tunnels. The tunnels, as they inspected this afternoon, were both collapsed and flooded, and scuba suits wouldn't be invented for like 50 years, so they were good there. Besides, the stairway up from the tunnels led directly to the armed guards. So if he managed the impossible and made it into the castle by the tunnels, he would be looking down the barrels of two pistols. There was no such thing as a sure thing in this business, but this was about as close as it got. Honestly, I feel bad for taking your money for this, Ganimas said. Not bad enough to give the money back. This vacation had paid for itself 10 times over. Still, he should tell the Baron, once again, about how fruitless this was. Now, all that was left for them to do was stay awake and keep watch. Should be no problems at all. Around 3 a.m., the Baron felt the slap of Ganimas' cane on his leg.
He snorted awake. What?
You fell asleep, the old detective said. Don't do that again. By 4, both men were snoring, leaning on each other. When the sun rose around 6:30 a.m., both men groaned awake. Ganimas was a little tougher than the Baron, but neither man was really young enough to fall asleep in a chair and wake up feeling anything but miserable. Ganimas smiled as they descended the stairs. See? No problem. His men didn't raise the alarm, so nothing could have... Oh no. They had gone through two locked doors, and the men that Ganimas had brought with him laid sprawled out on the floor. The Baron didn't see them at first because he saw the rest of the room. Arsène Lupin had done it. He had made good on his threats. Since the Baron hadn't delivered up the goods he requested at the train station, Lupin had taken everything. Ganimas said he didn't know how Lupin had done it, but he sent a telegraph that morning and learned almost immediately that Arsène Lupin was still at La Santé. He had been in prison the whole night. Ganimas stood speechless. No holes in the ceiling. The windows were still barred from the inside. The gates still locked. The guards had been drugged, of course, falling victim to a pitcher of water that neither Ganimas nor the Baron had left out. It took them hours to wake up, but when they did, they, too, reported seeing and hearing nothing. Arsène Lupin had moved like a ghost. Ganimas snapped out of it and turned to the Baron. He needed to do two things. First, lodge a formal complaint. The Baron said, one, going outside was scary, and two, the police had already laughed at him. If he went in, saying that Arsène Lupin moved through his walls like a ghost and had taken everything, they would think him lying or worse. Plus, he would have all manner of investigators allowed in this house collecting clues and... Wait, shouldn't Ganimas be collecting clues? Ganimas said collect them from what? The barred windows, the locked gates, the spotless walls and doors? Arsène didn't leave clues even when it was obvious how he came and went. Ganimas told the Baron to call the police, but he pursed his lips. Maybe don't mention that he was here. I would pay anything to have that collection back. The Baron wrung his hands. He had money. Too much money for one man to spend in the time he had left. But that collection, it was irreplaceable. No, Ganimas said. Don't pay a ransom. That only encourages them. The Baron gestured all around him. Encouraged them to do what, exactly? There was nothing more for him to steal. The detective sighed. Okay, he guessed he understood, but that was a desperate last option. He was going to talk to Lupin in prison as soon as he was back in Paris. And he would be back in Paris as soon as he could get on the next train. The Baron shouldn't do anything drastic until he heard from Ganimas. The Baron, on the verge of tears, after losing his life's work of stuff he bought, nodded. Ganimas waited for the guards. In the months since he had been back from America, he hadn't come to see the man whose capture made Ganimas the most famous detective in Europe since Herlock Sholmes. He hadn't had the occasion to, but he didn't know how Lupin had robbed a locked room from behind bars. He was here for answers.
Ganima! I am so happy to be able to entertain you here in my chosen retreat. Arsene Lupin beamed. Sometimes it's nice to get away from the world, really take relaxation and be alone with your thoughts.
Convictions can help you do that, Ganima observed.
There he is. I hope you know I hold you in the highest regard, my friend. I am so sorry I can't offer you refreshments. Not even a glass of beer. Don't worry, though. I'm only here temporarily.
Lupin was meticulously shaven, and his clothes were spotless. He sat on his cot. A bare table and chair were the only other adornments in the room. He gestured for Ganimard to take a seat. The detective didn't know how nice it was to see a friend, and not one of the guards who turn his room out 10 times a day and tear the linings from his jackets. He would be quite content to live in his own quiet way, as he had done, troubling no one who didn't deserve it.
Live as you did on other people's money, Ganima said, lighting a cigar. And what am I doing now? Lupin said, gesturing to his cell. Ganima smiled. Well put.
He came because he had some questions. Arsene reclined, interlacing his fingers behind his head.
Ah, the Cahorn affair. With the Baron, yes. He was served the papers regarding the accusation. At least the guard also found the humor in it. Him robbing a castle from prison.
Ganima nodded. That was the reason why the detective was there. The officers of Rouen, where the crime had taken place, were convinced of their own inadequacy, and his office was contacted.
And that's how you heard of it, Lupin smiled.
Ganima froze and then narrowed his eyes.
Yes. Lupin grinned.
Okay. Continue. Ganima said that he was here to see if Lupin had been involved with it.
He puffed his cigar.
Oh, absolutely. From A to Z, the gentleman thief said.
Ganima coughed when he sucked in the smoke, sitting up.
What?
Oh, yeah, Lupin nodded, rising and going to his desk. I even have the receipts.
Receipts? Yeah, 1 minute, Arsene said, fishing through a drawer in the table.
My receipts from the certified letters. Ah, here they are.
He produced 2 receipts from the 2 times the Baron had been threatened.
Lupin said that it was crazy. They searched him every couple of hours, undid the stitches in his jacket, cut open his mattress, looked in every crack in the wall, yet they didn't think that Arsene Lupin would keep letters in a drawer.
Tell me, Arsene Lupin smirked. What did you think of my letter to the Baron?
I was being honest. If he only packed up what I asked for, I would have left him alone.
No one ever takes that option, though.
You were playing to the gallery with that letter, Ganima spat. It had been published in the paper. He was rousing up the public for his own reputation.
Lupin gasped and put his hand on his chest. He was disappointed in the detective. He should have figured it out by now. That letter was the key to everything.
Ganima was now curious.
How?
Arsene nodded. Sure, okay, he'd do the detective's job for him. So this is all hypothetical. Say a rich baron gets that letter, and he's laughed out of the local police station, and he happens to look in his newspaper, and what does he see but a world-famous detective vacationing in his town? What will he do?
There was a knock at the door. They brought in Lupin's lunch. Water, bread, and an egg. Both Lupin and Ganima thanked the guard, who left without a word.
Ganima didn't answer, but Lupin kept going.
Well, the Baron's a fish, so he'll either take the bait or he won't, and if he doesn't, they're out nothing but a favor from a local reporter.
But if he does, then that detective says no.
But then, say the Baron gets another letter on the day before the crime. That scares him back into seeking help from the detective. And what if that detective was a person, not mentioned on the police reports, but upon a more intentional interrogation of the Baron? Whose name came up?
Ganima said that that person would be a person of interest.
Likely the culprit.
Lupin smiled and clapped his hands, pointing to the detective.
Exactly. And there was only one name to draw out the Baron, to defend him from the terrors of Arsene Lupin.
Ganimard's cigar fell from his mouth. The man who caught him. Arsene Lupin smiled. You impersonated me, Ganymos said, flummoxed.
Arsene said that he was in a cell, and those were hypotheticals. But if the Baron was pressed any harder in his interviews with the police, he might name Ganymos. Ganymos would have to arrest himself, since he was at the scene of the crime that night.
Because you live alone, right?
Oh, you wouldn't have an alibi.
Lupin said that he himself would probably be convicted for less.
Ganymos gripped his chair, but Arsene told him to relax. The Baron was dropping the charges. The investigation would cease. His secret was safe with his old friend Lupin.
Ganymos said that his office had just been called. The investigation has been moved up the chain. This wasn't stopping. And besides, it was Ganymos's word versus a Baron.
Lupin finished the sentence.
Yeah.
He might be annoyed with how the investigation is going. Might get fed up and say Ganymos's name. Then all it would take was one of the Baron's trinkets showing up in Ganymos's house. His office. His pocket on the street. Imagine those headlines. They would assume Lupin and Ganymos were in league.
But, Lupin stopped, as he saw the detective's red face about to pop.
It's all been taken care of. The investigation will cease. The charges will be dropped. The Baron will stay quiet. All of his things have already been returned. A deal brokered, well, by the great Ganymos himself.
Ganymos asked how Arsene knew all these things.
Lupin said he had just received a telegram.
But he didn't like to check his telegrams when talking to people. It was rude. Like, you're in a conversation. Stop checking your telegrams. Be present.
But yeah, go ahead. Read it for yourself.
Lupin pointed to the egg on his tray.
He told Ganymos to break it, please.
With one pop of the spoon on the egg, a blue corner of paper sprouted.
Ganymos pulled it from the egg.
It said,
contract closed. 100,000 balls delivered. All well.
100,000.
The detective sat back, like the wind was knocked out of him.
Francs, yeah,
Lupin said. Not as much as he had hoped from selling the Baron's art to the Baron,
but that Ganymos,
he drove a hard bargain.
Ganymos shook his head.
Oh, what?
Lupin asked.
It was a victimless crime.
Except for the Baron, Ganymos observed.
Oh, please. The man is a multimillionaire who spends his life shut up in his castle. He won't notice that 100,000 being gone, and when he dies, what? It'll all go to some nephew so the brat can buy another castle or something?
But I can't explain this to you.
Of course, a dog will bark if his master is threatened.
Ganymos rose. Since this was all buttoned up, he would be seeing Lupin at his trial.
Lupin should be careful about who he called a dog, because thanks to Ganymos, Lupin would be the one living in a cage.
Lupin shrugged.
Yeah, about my trial, I don't think I'm going to go.
Ganymos said it was his trial. He had to go.
I don't have to do anything, Lupin said. I stay in prison as long as I want to, and not 1 minute more.
I will miss these chats, though. You know what? We should plan something for when I get out.
Wednesday, first of the month, I'll smoke a cigar at your house.
Ganymos smiled and nodded. I will expect you.
Arsene Lupin was escaping. They had him. It started when they intercepted a message from him and his food. They were tipped off to the possibility when Ganymos told them Lupin had received a telegraph and an egg. They started splitting everything open and found, in a confiscated cigar, a message that the carriages that would take Lupin from one of his hearings was compromised. They learned which one, too, when Arsene Lupin pressed down the lever. The door opened like it was open from the outside, and Lupin rolled out onto the street in the middle of Paris while the carriage continued on back to prison. He tried to flag down the carriage, but it just kept going. Arsene Lupin shrugged and went to a restaurant. After a beer and a cigarette, He asked for the bill, but when it came, he patted his jumpsuit. Ah! He left his pocketbook back at prison. Maybe they could open up a tab for him based on his name. He was Arsène Lupin. The waiter laughed, but Lupin continued. His home address, well, oh, that was actually pretty easy. He was a prisoner at La Santé. Though now he was a fugitive, he guessed. Arsène rose, thanked the man, before slipping into the crowded street. He walked, hands in his pockets, back the way he had come this morning, until, before long, he was at La Santé, the prison. The walls loomed ahead of him. He looked around, waved his hands, knocked on the door. Hello? He was a fugitive from the law? Anybody? A guard walked over. Come on, move along. Lupin said no. He was left behind from a carriage. He was Arsène Lupin. It seems he forgot his keys. He never actually had keys. Could someone let him back in his cell? The guard said that didn't sound right. He called out, and they opened the front gate of the prison. In moments, the warden came storming out. What was their most famous prisoner doing on the street? Lupin laughed. Oh, okay, that was funny. Like all this hadn't been planned. The warden said he had no idea what Lupin was talking about. Lupin pointed a thumb over his shoulder. Those guys over there, those weren't his guys? Half a block away, 20 men, all police, milled around on the sidewalk, just like they had been milling around half a block away from where he sat at the restaurant. And when he stepped out of the carriage, this was the plan, to get him to lead them to his compatriots. It wasn't a bad one, Lupin informed him. Maybe don't move in unison next time. The carriage not stopping, too, was a bit much. The warden swore and ordered Lupin shackled and brought inside. The papers caught wind of Lupin at a restaurant, and it was the news cycle for the entire day. Everyone was amazed by Lupin's resourcefulness. Even his judge, who joked about the escape the next time he had a hearing. He said it was only preliminary to his actual escape. The judge said, I'm a judge, you probably shouldn't be telling me this, but Lupin only smiled. It wasn't necessary for them to understand. Just to know that he wouldn't be at his trial. As the trial grew closer, everyone was on high alert. Lupin was moved to a new cell, isolated. He wasn't allowed out at all. He was going to his trial, the guards asserted. Though, deep down, they thought that he was gonna escape again. Honestly, he always seemed to be one step ahead of them. But Lupin gave up. He didn't move. He just laid on his side, on his cot, all hours of the day and night, barely rising, except to take a few bites of food and go to the bathroom. It was nearly a month later when the trial commenced, and everyone who saw Lupin was shocked. Even in prison, he had shaved and regularly cut and styled his hair. Now, he was disheveled. His beard had grown out, and he was thin, gaunt, even. His hair hanging down over his face, the judge demanded the defendant's name. The defendant mumbled something. The judge said Lupin needed to speak up, so the man did. He said, Baudru, Désiré. A murmur of surprise spread across the courtroom. The judge wasn't deterred. Cool, another alias. That made what, a baker's dozen? She laid out the case. 3 years ago, Arsène Lupin appeared. They knew next to nothing about him. His family, his hometown, his history, all a mystery. They were merely guesses. No one knew who was beneath his many disguises, even this current one. The defendant only mumbled, he was Baudru Désiré. The prosecution went on, detailing Arsène Lupin's many crimes, thefts, cons, and swindles. The defendant remained looking at the table in front of him, hair hanging low. Finally, Ganimard was called to the stand to detail Lupin's capture in America. But throughout his testimony, he kept looking over at the defendant. He was distracted. The judge turned to the detective. If he needed to do this on a different day, he could. She didn't understand what was taking so much of Ganimard's attention. Ganimard rose. Could he inspect the prisoner? He didn't wait to get permission. He wasn't paying attention to the judge. He was only focused on the man sitting in the place of the defendant, someone he had spent a transatlantic crossing chained to. "This isn't Arsène Lupin," Ganimard said, parting the hair in front of the defendant's face. Ganimard slammed his fists down on the table. How could they let this happen? The judge barked for order as the spectators erupted. She demanded to know what was happening. How did Ganimard know? Ganimard said he knew Lupin's face better than anyone outside the man's own crew. This wasn't Lupin's face. His hair was too long. He had freckles where Lupin didn't have freckles. The shape is different. Lupin is trim, while this man's cheeks are puffy. The skin color is even slightly different. His eyes were glassy, like he had been drugged. This wasn't Lupin. The judge called in the guards, who had brought Lupin to the prison. "Was this man Arsène Lupin?" she said, pointing to the man who, again, mumbled, "Baudru, Desiree." "Yeah, I think so," the guard said. "You think so?" the judge clarified. "They had one job, and they think this might be the guy that they have been watching for the past 6 months?" 2 months, the guards corrected. "He had been transferred to their unit 2 months ago, after his escape attempt." "Not the point," the judge barked. She rose. They were going to postpone this while they got to the bottom of who this man was and where Arsène Lupin had gone. Desiree Baudru had been detained at the courthouse 2 months prior on an unrelated charge. He spent the night there while things were being cleared up. And once it was determined that he was innocent of whatever he was charged for, the story doesn't say what the charge was, Desiree was released. At exactly the same time, Arsène's carriage left out the back of the depot. The door flew open and Arsène stepped out. This is where the official record diverges from Desiree's testimony. Prison records state that the carriage drove back to the prison empty, and that the escape was discovered about an hour before Lupin knocked on the door, but kept a little quiet. Desiree, once he had some time after his trial and was speaking more clearly, told a different story. He said he was grabbed by the carriage drivers and thrown in the carriage, taken back to the prison, and deposited quietly in cell 24, in isolation. He tried to complain, but the guards wouldn't hear him, so he sunk into a deep despair. He laid on his cot, staring at the wall for almost 2 months until being removed for the trial earlier that week. The investigation took another month, and resources were called in from all around France. The man known as Desiree Baudru was difficult to locate, but he wasn't Arsène Lupin. He was from Paris, well, he slept in Paris. He slept in a tent near the barrier. He went through the trash for salvage. Ganimard interviewed the man, and his assertion at the trial was his final conclusion. This wasn't Arsène Lupin. He didn't know how the man had done it. He obviously had allies in disguise inside the prison system, but he had done it, just like he and the newspapers all around Paris had said he would. Arsène Lupin had escaped. Ganimard never quite bought the story that Desiree told, though. It was too convenient that a man with no past, no paper trail, happened to be outside the depot the moment Lupin's men were looking for someone of a similar height and build to pass off as their boss. Ganimard figured Desiree, for as much as he acted like he didn't know anything, was in on it. After a month, they couldn't hold the wrong guy, and they didn't have enough to charge Desiree with anything. So, after the first of the year, on a foggy Wednesday in January, Desiree walked out the gates of the Santé. But he wasn't alone. Ganimard got approval to tail Desiree, and that's exactly what he did. He and two others followed the man as he plodded down the streets. He stopped and traded his jacket for a different one at the store, produced money from who knows where, and continued on, down to the taxi dispatch. Ganimard got the attention of one of his partners. "Get a taxi. No, two. One in each direction." Ganimard would stay watching the waiting room. 10 minutes passed. Then 15. Desiree had not emerged. Ganimard rose and walked into the dispatch. The waiting room was empty, and there was a back exit. Ganimard rushed down the hallway, burst through the door, and found Desiree asleep, not 20 paces ahead of him, on a bench. Ganimard breathed and went to go take a seat at a cafe. 2 hours later, Desiree yawned, rose, and returned to his home on the wall. Ganimard would keep a man on him for the next week, but even that would be hard to justify. It seemed that Arsène Lupin had gotten away. Ganimard arrived back at home, and as soon as he entered, he knew something was different. He smelled the air as he hung up his hat and coat. Down the hall, the end of a cigar glowed orange in the darkness. "I don't know why you watched him all day. I told you I would be here. Come on, I have one for you too," Ganimard heard. The voice was the same one that taunted him in prison nearly 3 months prior. "I don't need to invite you in. It's your house," the voice from the darkness stated. Ganimard walked toward the sitting room in the back. He clicked on the electric light, but it didn't respond. "I made sure you wouldn't ruin the ambiance," Lupin said. In the moonlight, the visitor gestured to a table. "Please, I already cut it for you. Lighter's right there." Ganimard swatted it to the ground. "How did Arsène do it? How did he make the switch?" Arsène Lupin took a long draw from his cigar. Closer now, Ganimard could see the puffy cheeks, the freckles. He gasped. "Nice of you to catch up," Lupin said. Ganimard said, "No, you were him the whole time." Ganimard took that seat. The room was spinning. Lupin had been at his trial after all. It was his own testimony that planted the seeds of doubt. The seeds that made sure Lupin wouldn't need to escape. That he would walk free out the open gates of the prison. As if he could read Ganimard's thoughts, Lupin said it was okay. It wasn't Ganimard's fault. It was inevitable. Or rather, the belief that it was inevitable. You say something over and over again, and people start to believe it's true. They only needed someone. Ganimard, in this instance, but it could have been anyone. But someone to say, "That man is not Arsène Lupin," for the lie to become truth. If only one person had stood up and spoken the truth and said that he was in fact Lupin, the spell would have been broken. His face would have been scrutinized. Maybe they would have seen the injection points where he administered the toxins, causing his face to puff up, or the rash under his beard, where he used the chemicals to make his hair grow thicker. Maybe they would have listened to his voice or realized that his eyes were actually the same color of Arsène Lupin's. It was because Ganimard and everyone else believed that it had to be true, that it was true. That was all. And Desiree? Ganimard asked. Lupin said not to feel bad for him. He was a prisoner, sure, but he didn't even know it. He spent the last 2 months in London's best hotels, being waited on hand and foot before earning his last bit of payment for sleeping on a park bench, where Lupin watched Ganimard watching Desiree for 2 hours this morning. Ganimard sneered. Well, there was no place for Lupin to run now. They had him. They took measurements, photographs, fingerprints. He couldn't hide behind his anonymity. "I got a telegram in an egg during our meeting. In prison," Arsène rejoined. "You think I didn't have any data you had on me altered? And how well do you know those American policemen who took it all down? You know what I want you to know about me, which is nothing." Arsène rose, but Ganimard rose with him. The old detective said that there was no way he was going to let Arsène Lupin leave. He made a fatal error coming back here. He lunged at Lupin and grabbed his elbow. Arsène sighed and grabbed Ganimard's arm and twisted. "Look, if you don't unhand me, I'm afraid I'll have no recourse but to break your arm," Lupin said, twisting it more. Ganimard relaxed his grip and Lupin didn't break his arm. He let go. Lupin brushed off his jacket. This had been fun, but he was going to go have dinner. Prison food was nice, but it wasn't dinner with a British ambassador. The cigar glowed a final time before smoke rose in the moonlight. Oh, and one more thing. Ganimard didn't need to worry. Lupin wasn't going to tell anyone that the detective was the one who gave the snowball its downhill nudge, leading to Lupin walking free. It would remain the shame of the prison system. It could be their little secret. Arsene paused, and before leaving out the back door, he noticed something. The Baron, this, they had more and more of these. Secrets, that is. Almost like friends. With that, Arsene Lupin slipped out the back door of Ganimard's house, leaving the detective almost grinning in the darkness. And for the first time in nearly a year, Arsene Lupin was a free man. That's it for this week. Today's episode was adapted from the stories Arsène Lupin in Prison and The Escape of Arsène Lupin by Maurice Leblanc. And if you can't tell, fictional is back for real this time. In 2 weeks, look for a story adapted from Alexander Pushkin about a ghost, a cursed card game, and why you shouldn't date that creepy guy who just stands there staring at you while you work. And also, big, big news, we have two more shows out. The first is Best of the Worst, which used to be a little end segment right here. It's getting its own twice-weekly show. That one's a lot of fun. That one is called, surprise, Best of the Worst. The other big news is that we've partnered with Cast Media to make a history show. It's called Scoundrel, History's Forgotten Villains. It's the stories of quirky, real-life bad guys from history. On the first two, which are out now, we have an unkillable Irishman in America during Prohibition. And on the second, it's a man who designed submarines, maybe co-invented a death ray, and who might have been a double agent for Queen Victoria. We love the show, and we think you will too. Chris and I are the hosts. Please check it out. You can find it by searching for Scoundrel wherever you get your podcasts, or by following the link in the show notes. Fictional is by Jason and Carissa Weiser. Our theme song is by the amazing Breakmaster Cylinder. Thank you so much for listening, and we will see you again in 2 weeks.